A Financial, and we'll wait till the courtroom clears out.
May it please the
people are coming, people are going. Okay, good morning, Mr. Edelman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court.
You know, I'm going to ask a favor of you. If you could, stand in front of the mic so that we can record you.
Your Honor, this case involves a 139% loan agreement that provides for the selection of an arbitrator based on race, namely membership in the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. The Webb defendants, who are one member of the tribe and a series of South Dakota chartered entities, do not lend to members of the tribe. So all disputes that these defendants have will be with non-Native Americans.
I'm going to start you out with a question, and then I'll ask the same question of Ms. Calloway. I understand from the public record that the FTC has sued these same defendants in federal district court in South Dakota. And it seems that one of the claims of the FTC is that the defendants are forcing debtors into a tribal forum that lacks jurisdiction. Should we stay proceedings here pending the resolution of that issue in South Dakota? And do you have any objections to this court inviting the FTC to weigh in on the jurisdictional issue in this case?
I do not have any objection to obtaining input from either the federal agency or the state regulator. And I have no view on whether this court should allow the District of South Dakota to decide it. I think
whether we should stay proceeding.
We have no opinion one way or the other on it. I think that one of the provisions and the other provisions in the challenged loan agreement, which in our view is intended to and has the effect of making redress impossible, is that disputes have to be review of an arbitration award, dispute resolution that goes to court has to be done by the tribal court, and under Supreme Court precedent, there is no tribal jurisdiction between a South Dakota chartered entity and a non-Indian. The fact that the entity is owned majority or completely by a Native American does not mean that disputes can be brought in tribal court. Rather, there has to be under the Montana case and the Plains Commerce Bank case some interest on the part of the tribe, such as entry onto the reservation, tribal self-government, or internal relations between members of the tribe. There isn't, and the state proceedings against the defendants were all objected to on that ground, and the courts found that there is no tribal interest in a loan made by one of Webb's companies to a non-Native American.
Now, if the tribal arbitrator truly behaves as the plaintiffs fear, I'd assume that the lender would have a difficult time enforcing these judgments or rulings in the courts. I mean, would you concede that there are post-judgment remedies that could protect the plaintiffs if the tribal courts or tribal arbitrators exhibit bias and ignore unwaivable state laws?
No, Your Honor.
No.
First, we object to the designation of the arbitrator under Shelley versus Kramer and its progeny. You just can't have this as a criteria. Second, one of the things that the FTC did was another thing that they did was complain about their collection practices. They, the web defendants, would send notices to their customers' employers upon non-payment, purporting to demand without any legal process that their wages be turned over. So that was enjoined. More recently, well, it's not in the record, but more recently, the debts have been sold to third parties. So the answer is no. In fact, we don't think any arbitrations have ever taken place. They do not use any arbitrations to enforce these loans. They have other methods of doing it.
Could you, in your analysis, distinguish between a lack of subject matter jurisdiction in the tribal court and the right to arbitration? I mean, could you pull that apart so the lack of subject matter jurisdiction doesn't really affect the contract right that gave rise to the arbitration?
Because that's correct. The subject matter, the tribal court jurisdiction issue is not the same as whether the arbitration provision is valid.
Right. So if we find that there's no subject matter jurisdiction in the courts, it doesn't necessarily mean that we can't honor the arbitration agreement, right?
Well, that's correct. The two don't follow, although when the contract says that review is to be by the tribal court, if the tribal court doesn't have jurisdiction, that's a problem. But these provisions have to be looked at in concert, because they operate in concert to prevent any remedy. For example, the contract further provides that no federal or state law applies. It says that
you argue that somehow the contracts prevent the prosecution of felonies against Illinois residents. How come private contracts have any effect on the power of Illinois prosecutors or the Illinois Attorney General to pursue, you know, criminal claims against these defendants?
Well, I think
regardless of what it says.
They don't. And I think the reason we cite the criminal usury provision is that it illustrates that Illinois has a very strong paternalistic public policy against unregulated, high-interest, out-of-state lenders.
Yeah, well, it's true that Illinois has a very strong public policy against usury. But it does not, to my knowledge, have a policy that your usury issues must be decided by Illinois courts.
If you look at the case law, such as the English versus Northwest case, which was in our Rule 28 response, the Korean American Broadcasting case, Mitsubishi and Vimar Seguros, where it is evident that a choice of law and choice of form clause are contrived to evade state public policy, then yes, there is such a prohibition. And those cases did look at what the prohibition was, what the nature of the prohibition was, whether it was paternalistic, and as this court stated in the Enron case, are we dealing with quote, agreements designed to get around statutes that protect the contracting parties from their own improvidence, close quote. And the answer is yes. Illinois restricts access to these loans in terms of the amount of income that a borrower can devote to them, the number of loans that may be had. It requires that high-interest consumer loans be registered with a state database so as to prevent improvident and excessive lending. It makes a loan at these rates to be a felony. The jurisdictional provision of the criminal code says that if you're outside the state and you cause the effect in the state, you're subject to Illinois jurisdiction. They're non-waiver provisions. Most recently, effective January 1st, these loans have been declared utterly void and unenforceable. In Illinois, they can't even get back their principal, and if you pay the principal, the borrower is entitled to get it back.
Do you assert that these choice of forum provisions in the contract were the result of fraud?
We believe that they're the result. There are misrepresentations in the contract, such as non-application of state law and whether these entities are not subject to state jurisdiction. But we do say
but
that they're
PD
the product.
Did PD Financial put them in there as a fraudulent inclusion?
Yes. The whole purpose,
was it intended to schnooker the borrowers?
The whole purpose of these clauses is to prevent any remedy from being exercised and to evade state laws.
And so there was a fraudulent intent.
We think this is, yeah. Yes. And this was done at a time when they were being pursued by four or five states for evading similar licensing requirements. We also, just on the terms of these loans, we submit that they're the product of excessive bargaining power. And, most importantly, they're an evasion of clear Illinois public policy designed to protect Illinois residents against having excessive obligations of this nature.
But if the court were... Sorry. If the provisions were fraudulently inserted in the contract, that prevents the necessity of looking at everybody's state laws who might be, whose consumers might be subject to these provisions, right? I mean, I think for a moment about Indiana, for example, but it happens in this case, it's Illinois law. But if, in fact, it's fraud, it's going to reach across and beyond the state law boundaries.
It's an evasion. Well, you have to look at the state regulation to make sense of the fraud. The purpose of these provisions is to evade state restrictions like in Illinois and Indiana, which also has stringent restrictions on payday and similar high-interest loans. And that's the purpose of these provisions. I see I'm in...
Yeah, but don't worry. How is this different?
The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Well, in this case, the lady. No, but how is this different from a contract with any other sovereign? For example, if a debtor signs a contract, you know, with a Mexican lender and the contract requires that disputes be arbitrated in Mexico, you're going to most certainly have Mexican arbitrators. Is there something improper about that?
No, Your Honor. First, the law, you're not strictly specifying that the only qualification of the arbitrator is their ethnicity or race. Second, Mexican law is ascertainable. If there is any law on this part of this tribe, it's not ascertainable by somebody in Chicago. The record shows we actually attempted to do so. You can't do it.
Like dice and dolls?
Precisely.
And the dice?
Precisely.
I know where the numbers were.
Make it up as you go. Yeah, they make it up as you go along. The other thing is this. Most of the cases upholding clauses of this, venue clauses, are cases involving substantial business transactions, and defendants rely on cases such as Mazumdar, where the only effect of designating the place of hearing is designation of the place of hearing. There was no question in that, in most of the other cases, of evading state public policy of the sort that is involved here, namely to prevent Illinois residents from getting these loans in an excessive amount.
Okay.
Unless Your Honors have some other questions, I'll reserve the remaining.
And I'll give you a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Calloway, good morning.
May it please the court, counsel, ladies and gentlemen. The issue that was ruled upon by the trial court here is the enforceability of the forum selection provision that was clearly and conspicuously disclosed in the contract that each of the plaintiffs entered into with Western Sky.
I just want to start you out with my first question is, do you have any any objection to us asking the FTC to weigh in or staying?
One thing I would note is that the issues presented here and the issues presented by the FTC before Judge Lang in the United States District Court for South Dakota are a little bit different. I would note...
Yeah, but we start with jurisdiction.
Yes, and I would have no objection to having the FTC weigh in. We would request time to respond. We really do believe that it is within this court's discretion to determine whether to stay or not. We do note that the issues are separate. The challenge that the FTC is making is to an ability to garnish that, by the way, did not involve Western Sky. It involved other lenders that were operating on the reservation. But we would have no objection, Your Honor. In ruling on the enforceability...
How do these parties get judicial review of a decision by the tribal arbitrator under the applicable law?
They would present it, we submit, to tribal court, and tribal exhaustion would be here because...
Is there law about that? Is there a procedure that they would follow?
They would follow the procedure, and I think it's important to note that all of this law is available. It's available for free from the National Indian Law Library. It's available for $25 from the tribe itself. And
why couldn't they find it?
You know what? I think that's almost a rhetorical question, Your Honor.
Hey, why couldn't they find it?
I think that not only did we direct them to it, they did not want to pay for it. I think that
They didn't want to pay $25?
I think they said it was $75, and I know this is not in the record. When my secretary...
Well, then I understand.
Yes. the review, they would follow the procedures of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. And it's worth noting that the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, its courts are the same courts out of which the Plains Commerce Bank came. This is an established court with rules, with its own rules of procedure, its own law. And where they don't have law, the tribe follows federal law and principles.
Actually, the forum selection provision implicates a whole array of procedural issues and jurisdictional issues. When the district court decided just the forum selection clause, it necessarily meant something in terms of other remedies and other appeal rights and so forth, right?
Well, and you know, the...
If the district... I'll just finish my question. Sorry. I'm thinking of it as I go.
Sure.
So if the district court said, okay, on forum selection, that was the first domino, wasn't it? Because then it says, and the forum's law, and the forum's procedures, and the forum's appellate rights, and so forth.
So to plant
the dispute there had these implications get more troublesome because the law is so either vague or inaccessible or uncertain or perhaps not even existent.
Well, I think that's an allegation. And it's important to note that not only does the law exist, these are arguments that were made before the trial court and the trial court rejected. And you're correct that once it is handed to the forum, it is then the forum's role to analyze these other claims.
So if I want to know exactly what, you know, the tribal law is, I send $75 where?
You would send it to the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, to the tribal courts, except it cost my secretary $25 to obtain this last week, just because we wanted to test the $75 hypothesis. I recognize this is not in the in the record. But also, last week when we called the National Indian Law Library, they PDF'd in several emails a free copy of the laws to us, including the procedural rules and other rules.
How are these claims? I'm not sure. I think I interrupted you. You want to finish your last answer, and then I'll ask my next question.
I'm happy to answer all of the questions here. So much was stated by the plaintiffs, but nothing was mentioned regarding the test applied by the trial court in determining whether the forum selection clause was enforceable.
Does the trial court have a usury? Does the tribe have a usury statute?
The tribe's usury statute was enacted in 1978 and then was superseded by its adoption of other laws in the 1980s.
Of usury? So,
of usury. Similarly, Your Honor, if you look at South Dakota, which is the state in whose exterior bounds are surrounded, or the exterior
it encompasses.
Yes, exactly. South Dakota similarly does not have a usury limit, nor does Delaware. And today, if you wanted to obtain one of the laws that the plaintiffs talk about is the Payday Loan Reform Act. Loans made under that act are made at 434% APR, more than three times, actually, I guess in my math, almost four times the rate that is complained of here. Because, you know, usury regulations, they are statutory.
What are you, 139%?
139%. And if you look at the six-page contract, it clearly says this is an expensive form of credit. Pay it off early if you can. It also gives the parties, I'm sorry, it also gave the plaintiff a day to opt out of the arbitration provision. None of the plaintiffs here did. I can submit as an officer of the court that counsel for plaintiffs recently opted out of an arbitration provision with Western Sky.
How are these claims actually being litigated in tribal courts or with tribal arbitrators? There must be hundreds, if not thousands of cases, given the extent of the advertising on the web and what I view as the onerous terms of the loans. Have the tribal arbitrators concluded that Illinois law and federal law can be waived?
That very question has not yet been decided by the tribal arbitrators. But it's important to note that nothing in this agreement says that the plaintiffs cannot present those questions to the tribal arbitrator. The same way that if this action was brought before an arbitrator in Indiana or even before an Indiana court, the plaintiffs can say, arbitrator, we think that Illinois law should apply because we are Illinois residents.
What is the choice of law rule in usury in tribal law?
The tribe will look at the same principles of fairness and debtor friendliness, I would submit, with regard to the tribal courts, and listen to what the plaintiffs have to say, allow them to plead their case. The choice of law provision in the tribal code really reflects tribal jurisdiction. As you may recall, tribal jurisdiction, and if we talk about the Montana case and the first Montana exception, tribal courts have jurisdiction over consensual contracts between a tribe member, which we have here with Mr. Webb and Western Sky, and a non-tribe member.
Contracts with a South Dakota entity, though, isn't it?
Actually, Your Honor, with regard to an LLC that is owned by a tribe member, Poirier versus South Dakota Department of Revenue made clear that an LLC that is owned by a tribe member actually retains the citizenship of its owner. And
you still haven't really answered my question about the choice of law clause. What I'm getting at, choice of law rule in tribal law.
The choice of law rule in tribal law, and we would be happy to further brief this if you would like, but these are loans made on the reservation by a tribal lender. The plaintiff reached onto the reservation to obtain the loan, and we would submit that the choice of law would be that the proper rule would be that tribal law applies.
So the tribal choice of law rule is to use its own law.
In contracts that call for it and that have a reasonable relation to the tribe.
In what way, then, does the tribe and its law take into consideration the countervailing public policy concerns of other jurisdictions that have a reasonable contact with the transaction?
We would submit in the same ways that other jurisdictions were.
No, that's not right. In other jurisdictions, they use the restatement section. There's a particular rule with respect to usury that allows jurisdictions to take into consideration the public policy of other states. And what you've just told me is the tribe, in effect, thumbs its nose at that rule.
I did not mean to suggest in any way that the tribe would do so. For example, in Illinois, with Section 187 of the restatement, which would apply in an Illinois court.
That 187 does not deal with usury.
187 it actually does deal with choice of law provisions.
In contracts, but not usury, not on the issue of usury. There's a special section for that.
I apologize if it seems that I am misreading the question here, but what I would like to say is there is nothing to indicate that the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe would thumb its nose at other states' considerations.
You're talking out of both sides of your mouth, frankly. I mean, at one point you tell me the tribe's view is that its choice of law rule on usury is that if the transaction has contacts with the tribe, then it will use it will use tribal law of usury. And then a few moments earlier you said, but they will take into consideration the public policy concerns of other states. And I asked how, and you couldn't answer.
I would like to answer. The tribal law is not only debtor-friendly, it is a law that allows for everyone to have their say. They would consider this and come to a ruling based on that transaction. Importantly here, the arbitrator is not limited in what he or she, or if it is a panel of three arbitrators, they are not limited to what they can hear, whether it is a consumer residing, and these are consumers, residing in the state of Illinois, or a consumer residing in the state of Indiana.
How is this debtor friendly when these poverty-stricken people who have to take out loans at 139% have to then travel to South Dakota? How is this debtor friendly?
I think it's important to note that there's no requirement to travel to South Dakota. The arbitration can be done on the phone. Also, the tribal court allows consumers to appear by telephone as well. But on the debtor friendly side of the tribe, the tribes look for resolutions, and I don't mean to speak for the tribal court, but I've been asked. The body of law looks for a resolution of fairness to assist the parties who bring their
grievances.
They're
all like us.
When the FTC amended its complaint to allege that the defendants deceptively manipulated the legal system to force these debt-burdened consumers to travel to South Dakota and appear before a tribal court that may or may not have jurisdiction over their cases, you are telling us that the FTC's amendment of the complaint is wrong, that these people can sit on the phone?
Yes, Your Honor. And with all due respect to my peers and learned colleagues at the FTC, this is an issue that we provided evidence on in the hearing before Judge Lang on October 9th in the United States District Court for the District of South Dakota. There is no requirement for travel, and in fact, the arbitration agreements do not require appearance in person either.
May I ask about the arbitrators and the arbitration process? Is that arbitration process set out in law as to the procedures that they'll follow and who gets to serve and the standards by which they'll make this decision of fairness?
It's a decision that's made by the tribe as to what standards will be used. And again, it looks toward federal law where there is no specific law.
So there's
it looks
no,
to the FAA.
Where's the law?
That's my question.
Again, the law is available from the tribe.
Well, tell me what the law is about choosing arbitrators.
Actually, with regard to the choice of arbitrator, that is governed by the terms of the arbitration agreement itself. And here, the plaintiff can obtain the names of tribal elders or tribal council members, and its counsel or the plaintiff can contact those people and choose the arbitrator. The arbitrator can be the plaintiff's choice.
Are there rules, or is it just palsy-walsy, or what? Do you have to abide by some sort of objective standards?
Yes, by tribal law and by the tribal code.
And what is that?
It is codified in the laws of 1978.
So give us an idea of what's been codified. What do they say in that code?
With what they say in that code, with regard to arbitration, there is not an arbitration provision. That is where they look to the Federal Arbitration Act.
This is Alice in Wonderland. Well, we are in Alice in Wonderland.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, the tribal law looks to federal law when there is an absence of tribal law. And here the Federal Arbitration Act provides for rules of arbitration.
And that's codified in all of these laws that I can buy for $25.
Or you can obtain for free. But, Your Honor, also, with regard to arbitration rules, the parties can also agree to a separate set of rules. Arbitration jurisdiction and arbitration subject matter jurisdiction and rules, it is agreed to by the parties, and here the parties have input.
Well, one of the arguments that your distinguished opposing counsel has raised is that it's not a fair fight, that you're dealing with people who are unsophisticated, and it's an adhesion sort of contract where it's take it or leave it. So to say they've got bargaining parity or that they should have picked out this provision and understood the nuances of it when they're entering into the transaction to get the money is a little far-fetched, isn't it?
Well, I must respectfully disagree. First, I think it's important to note again that plaintiffs here could have opted out of the arbitration provision altogether.
They had 24 hours to do that.
Had 24 hours to do so.
And $75.
Well, second, Your Honor, with regard to a lack of sophistication, these are consumers who went onto the Internet, had as much time as they would like to read the provisions of this contract. They were not penalized if they took days or weeks or if they didn't take out a loan at all. And the arbitration, if they obtained a 434% APR loan from an Illinois lender, they would also have to they would have to abide by the terms of that contract.
They had opted out of the arbitration clause.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where would they end up in if they had a dispute?
We would if they had brought their dispute here, we would have asked that it be dismissed and that they exhaust their tribal remedies.
So it's illusory. The whole thing is illusory.
I must disagree, Your Honor. There is nothing illusory about not being able to bring an action here. They could certainly bring their claim here. I'm saying what we would do, Your Honor. It would be up to this court to determine whether, absent the arbitration provision, they would be permitted to bring their claim here or be required to exhaust.
Calloway, if I can get back to my question. Tribal, you said if they did away with arbitration, they opted out of arbitration, you would insist upon their exhausting tribal remedies. What tribal remedies?
To go to tribal court, and they could bring the same claims here.
What in the arbitration, what in the contract says they have to go to tribal court?
It's the contract confers jurisdiction in the tribal courts. What we are saying, Your Honor, is that that is the position we would take if they filed the action before the Illinois courts here.
So you would say that you would read this contract as giving exclusive jurisdiction to the tribal courts in case there was, if the parties opted out of arbitration?
Yes, we would. And the first Montana exception, Your Honor, which talks about tribal courts having jurisdiction over contracts made by a tribe member and a non-tribe member, which are consensual contracts, which involve issues that over which the tribe has legislative and adjudicatory authority. Yes, Your Honor.
On page 12 of the reply brief, the plaintiffs contend that the Montana exception allowing tribal courts to exercise jurisdiction over non-tribal members applies only if the tribe regulates the activity at issue. So where in the record will we find evidence that the tribe regulates the activity at issue through any of the means that are described in Montana, in the Montana case?
First, it's important. I think that the Montana exception, I would prefer that, The evidence that the tribe regulates this is in the code. It's in the code that the plaintiffs did not want to pay for. I find it hard to believe that they do not have a copy of that code. And while we are constrained by the record that is before this court, which is the record that was before the trial court, the tribe has chosen to regulate lending in, I would submit, the same way that South Dakota and Delaware and other certain states have decided to regulate lending, which is to allow parties to contract to an interest rate upon which they agree.
And is that written in the code, or is that written in decisions that
it
interpret
is written
the
in the code?
Code?
It is written in the code.
And is there a record of decisional law with respect to what those provisions mean?
I don't know if there have been cases, decisions yet on what those provisions mean, but the tribe's law is reported in the Indian Law Reporter and is also available on Westlaw. So the body of law that the tribe has is a body that is discernible.
Thank you. I think I'm going to make you sit down.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. How much extra time did we – no, no. How much extra time did we give Ms. Calloway? What is that, from your head?
Yeah, it was like 5 minutes extra.
Okay. Would you agree that it was 5 minutes extra? Because that's what I've got to give you. Do you have a copy of the code?
I do not, Your Honor. We attempted...
Why didn't you pay the $25.75?
We attempted to...
Why didn't you take out a payday loan to get that $75?
We attempted to do what an untutored consumer would do. We went to the local law libraries. We attempted to use Lexis and Westlaw to find the applicable law. We found nothing. The counsel now states...
Mr. Edelman, you are such a sophisticated person and such a sophisticated lawyer. Did you go to the Native American, did you go to the Library of Congress? What did you do?
We looked at several local law libraries. My partner did it, and it's set forth in an affidavit, which is in the record.
Do you believe that you could have found it?
No.
Do you believe that if I sent $75 in today, which I'm not going to do, I could get it?
I don't know. What I do know is that counsel has just stated that either by provision or common law, there is no restriction in tribal law on the rate of interest that may be charged. That brings us squarely within the statement in the Bonney decision. If enforcement of the clauses would contravene a strong public policy of the forum in which the suit is brought, here Illinois, declared by statute or judicial decision, choice of forum clauses may not be enforced. Illinois has a strong public policy of restricting access to this type of loan. From what we've just heard, the tribe does not. Therefore, Illinois, a court sitting in Illinois, including a federal court, should not have enforced the choice of law or forum selection clauses.
The district court was bound by the choice of law rule of Illinois.
That is correct, which applies notwithstanding its default rule, so that even though this contract purports to say that no state or federal law applies, the Illinois General Assembly has the right to impose rules on transactions with Illinois residents. With respect to the Payday Loan Reform Act, there is a high nominal annual percentage rate, but nobody will pay it. There's a one-time fee of $1,550 per 100 loaned. The loans may not be rolled over. There are stringent limits on how much may be loaned. There are stringent limits on how many loans you can get. There are cooling off periods. There's a registration requirement, which I think may be the main reason defendants have all these convoluted provisions, which restricts access to high-interest loans. And, in fact, whether it's conspicuous or not is beside the point when the state policy is not with, no matter how clear and conspicuous the terms are made, we as a matter of policy restrict access to these loans. We're going to treat them in the same way as a controlled substance. You can have get so much and no more. And it's supported by studies showing that the people get into debt, they get into a sort of a treadmill of debt, and that is what we're trying to avoid. It is not up to the consent of the consumer. With respect...
Mr. Edelman, may I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Although I know you are entitled to make your argument here. There was discussion in the briefing about the tribal exhaustion doctrine. Does that apply here? Is it relevant to our decision?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, explain that to me, please.
Because this is simply not a case. Well, first, the decision maker is not a tribal forum. It is an arbitrator selected solely by contract. The arbitrator is not exercising adjudicative or authority on the part of the tribe. It is not the tribal court. It is simply somebody selected by contract. With respect to the tribal court...
But within the tribal rules, whatever they are.
Which we've just heard, there is no code.
Right.
With respect to whether jurisdiction exists in the tribal court, counsel relies on the...
Is that all you wanted to say about exhaustion?
Yes, Your Honor. It just doesn't apply where it's not a tribal court at all and where I think there is an absence of jurisdiction on the part of a tribal court, even if it did have something to do with this matter, which it doesn't, because the contract is not... I mean, the only thing a tribal court can do under this contract is enforce an arbitration award or determine the validity of the class action waiver.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Counsel relies on the Poirier case with respect to whether there is any sort of tribal jurisdiction. Poirier involved a state-chartered entity which was created by a tribe for a tribal purpose, where, on the other hand, majority Native American-owned entity is simply engaging in regular business dealings with non-Native Americans, such as the Air Vader case, there is no tribal jurisdiction. And that's the test in the Montana case. There has to be some tribal interest at stake, and it's already been decided in the state enforcement cases where this was raised as a defense to enforcement activity that there is no tribal interest. There is simply the interest of Mr. Webb and his various entities. I have no other comments unless Your Honors have some questions.
I do have a question, which I hope is not improper, not of you. Is there anyone from the FTC in the courtroom? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Case will be taken under advisement.